Welcome back to Open Mind with me, Frankie Bridge. I am so excited because today I am joined by the lovely Zoe Sugg. Some of you may know her as Zoella. She's a vlogger, an author, and a businesswoman. She's got it all going on. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
That's okay. I have literally wanted you on since the beginning of Open Mind.
Thank you.
We've finally got there. Three series in and we've got you. I just feel like with you, you're someone that I read once, this was a few years ago, that you were like one of the most influential people like in the world.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, that's insane. You're so young. You've done so much. Like, even before I knew what vlogging was, like I remember I met Tanya Burr.
Tanya Burr.
And they'd set up, I was doing something, I can't remember what it was, I was promoting something and I had an interview with her, and they'd set aside like, I don't know, like half an hour for this chat with her, and she literally strolled in, she had this tiny little camera, held it up with her arm like she was taking a selfie next to me, chatted for me for like 5 minutes and then left. And I was like, oh, so you're a blogger? And she was like, no, I'm a vlogger. And I was like, oh, I've never felt so old in my life. And it just blew my mind. You know, you had all these people coming in with all this stuff to set up, and then there she just rocked up with her little camera and then job done.
So stripped back.
Yeah. Do you find it like difficult to explain your job to like the older generation?
I definitely did at first, because I suppose in general, it's still quite a new thing, like blogging and vlogging. And obviously, I discovered blogging first, and that was back in 2008. And that was just simply writing about whatever you loved online and posting it. And if people read it, great. Most of the time, they didn't. And it was just this place to kind of share your thoughts, feelings, passions, and kind of meeting like-minded people. And then when that slowly turned more into like video blogging, hence where like vlogging comes from, I guess it was a way of, it's sort of like a video diary, isn't it? So you're picking up your camera and you're kind of going about your day and still talking about the things you love and the things you're passionate about. But back then, not many people were doing that. So you'd get some really funny looks whipping your camera out, like walking down the street or...
I don't know how you do that.
To be honest,
still with like, you know, like with Instagram, if anyone catches me doing it, I'm like, no, I have to do it in secrecy.
I know. I actually used to be so much better about it. I think I've gotten more and more shy as I've got older. Like the longer I've done it, which just makes no sense at all. But yeah, at first it was a weird concept to a lot of people because there wasn't that many people doing it. It was kind of this new thing. But I guess as time's gone on, more and more people have kind of got into it, or there's other ways of sharing now, like you said, Instagram, and I guess that's a style of video blogging, because we're all sharing our day-to-day lives and what we're up to, what we're eating and who we're hanging out with. But yeah, no, it's funny.
And how did you get into it then at the beginning? What made you do your first blog?
I think I'd stumbled upon a couple of other people's blogs and I'd thought, oh, I know what it was. I was Googling a product to find like a review of it because I wasn't sure if I wanted to buy it or not. And I think it was a Mac product. I was obsessed with Mac when I was like a teenager. And I was like, it's expensive. I want to see, you know, what other people are saying about it. I don't want to just read, you know, in a magazine what someone's saying or read an advert somewhere. I want to know like what real people think of this product before I buy it. And so I Googled the product and then someone's blog would pop up and it would be like, oh, MAC eyeshadow in this color. And then a photo of it on their eyelid and like them talking about it and like all of that stuff. And I thought that's such a good idea because you're really getting a whole different perspective on a product from someone who's just like me. And so I started Googling reviews on people's blogs of beauty products. And I thought, I feel like I could do this. Like I'm going out and buying all these products too. I kind of want to talk about what I think about them. So I think I started off with a Lush haul and I talked about all the things I'd ordered from Lush and what I thought of them and what they smelt like and like rating them out of five. And it kind of just took off from there.
That's mad. I love that. That's a good idea though. So I suppose that's a really good point, is you're reading people's opinions on things personally instead of reading whatever the brand has said about it. And yeah, it makes complete sense. I suppose that's kind of what, with Instagram now, a lot more people are doing. But I feel like you were at it before it really became a thing. So yeah, mental. Did you ever think, because I know you said before, like when you've spoken about anxiety and things like that, like you suffered with it before you started all of this. Mm-hmm. Did you think about that when you went into it? Or I suppose you thought, well, no one's going to read it anyway.
Yeah, I guess not, because to me at first it felt more like an escape from real life. So if I was having a really anxious week, I found so much comfort in sitting down and writing about the products I really enjoyed using. And it was a nice way of, I guess, sorry if you can hear my pug snoring, by the way. I just realised I've got my headphones on, so I can't hear her, but I know she's snoring really loudly.
That's all right.
Yeah, it was a nice way of me kind of feeling better about it. I guess it was an escape at first. Mm-hmm. And obviously at first no one was really reading it, so it was more just me talking into the abyss. And then eventually as people started chatting, you'd get to know people and you can make friends through there. And things like events started happening in like 2011 maybe. I went to my first event and, oh no, actually it would have been way before that, 2019 I think. And you start meeting other girls who are also writing their blogs, and it was like you built all these new friendships and you sort of created this little community of like-minded people. And I think that for me actually helped.
Yeah.
In a way, when I first started.
Where did your anxiety kind of come from when you were younger, do you think?
I think, so I remember being anxious as a child, but obviously when you're that young, you can't pinpoint why or how you're feeling that way.
No.
And it was usually in scenarios where I couldn't leave. So if like my parents went to their friend's house, for example, and me and Joe like came along, but we didn't really know their friends and we didn't really know their house, I can distinctly remember having those feelings of being like, I don't want to be here, but I have no choice.
Okay, that's interesting.
But obviously not really knowing that that's anxiety. I think I used to say, I don't feel well, like, and can I go home? but I remember the anxiety being much more prevalent in my life around the age of 14. So it's when, you know, exams are starting, you've started your period, you know, you've got like friendship dramas and everything starts getting a bit more serious in your life. Well, not serious, I'm using air quotes, because
yeah. It seems like life. Yeah,
exactly. And I think that's when I was like, okay, something's up, like when I was 14. And I still didn't really know what it was, though. I just used to think, I don't feel right in this situation, or I don't want to be here, or I think I just thought, I don't feel well, and mm-hmm. I just couldn't work it out. And literally until I was about 18, and that's when I was like, hang on, I'm going to Google like what's going on here. And then it mm-hmm. was like anxiety, and I was like, oh, maybe that's what this is. So for at least 4 years, I was having really bad anxiety in certain scenarios, or having panic attacks and not knowing what it was at all, and just thinking, there's something wrong with me, but I don't know what it is. And also, because I wasn't talking about it, there was nobody else to be like, oh yeah, me too, I have that sometimes. I just felt like it was just me.
Yeah. And what did you do then when you felt like, okay, this is what it is? Did you go and speak to someone? Did you go see a therapist?
So when I was about 18 and I was like, okay, this sounds like panic attacks and anxiety, I made an appointment at my local GP, and I went along, and I felt so like weird going to speak to somebody about it. And I was like, I just don't know. I felt really embarrassed. I walked in and I sat down, and I think it was a guy as well. And I just felt instantly quite like uncomfortable having to talk about it in like a GP like session.
Yeah. I suppose at the time you're like, well, is this an illness? I don't really know. Yeah,
exactly. And especially when I was 18, there just wasn't really anyone talking about mental health. Mm-hmm. There really wasn't that much on the TV about it that I'd seen anyway. None of my friends would talk about it. It just wasn't a thing that was discussed, talked about, shared. I hadn't really seen it in films. Like, yeah, it just felt really weird that I thought, I mean, I don't know why I'm going to speak to my doctor about it, but I feel like that's probably what I should be doing. And it wasn't a very great session with the GP. Like, he was like, oh, I think it's because you've started your period. And it's just your hormones, and it's not anxiety, and it's not panic attacks. I think he told me to buy a pair of trainers and go for a run.
Oh, for God's sake.
And I was like, okay. Well, if I felt embarrassed and unsure walking in here, I feel so embarrassed and like so unsure walking out. So that put me off going and speaking to anybody for at least another 2 years. Yeah.
2 years?
Yeah.
And did you tell your parents? Did you tell any friends at this point?
I think I did tell my parents, and they were very supportive. But again, I didn't feel like they really understood. Like, yeah. I would explain it and they'd be like, oh, you're just worried. Mm. Like, you just worry too much. But
that was me. You're a worrier. She's a worrier. And you're like,
yeah. Oh, you're just overthinking everything. I'm like, but should I feel like this all the time? How do I not overthink things then? But they were very supportive in me going to the doctors. And I think after that, I don't know, I guess I must have just, I don't even really remember what I did after. I think I must have just said, oh, it's my period.
Just got on with it. Yeah.
Yeah. And just carried on. But then I think at that stage in your life between 18 and 21, so much changes. And it's such an uncertain time. And I was one of those teenagers where all my friends had a plan and I just didn't feel like I had a plan. I was like, I don't know if I want to go to uni. I don't know what I would do at uni. What do I enjoy? I basically picked all the arty subjects. Yeah. So then I came out and I was like, well, do I want to be an artist? Or what do I want to do now? And so as all of that ramped up between 18 and 21 and all my friends were going out to clubs and like going and getting drunk, I just found all those situations so overwhelming, and I used to like flake out on all the plans, and I was that flaky friend, the flaky anxious friend.
Oh, I suppose for you it was drinking kind of, I don't know, like I do drink, but I find I can't drink the same amount as everyone else. Like I don't really enjoy that feeling of being drunk because it's that feeling of being out of control.
100%. That is me. I don't really drink because of that. And actually the last time, I was talking about this with my friends the other day, the last time I got really drunk, I was 18.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that was enough for me to be like, I'm not doing that again, because I just had the worst anxiety. Because I couldn't remember what I was doing 10 minutes beforehand. Yeah. I was like, no, this is not for me. So I'll have a little drink every now and then. But the thought of getting drunk, yeah, not having control. Even for a time, I didn't like being around drunk people.
Yeah, I think if you're not drinking as well, I think they can feel quite unpredictable.
Yeah.
And that's not comfortable to be around, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can be around drunk people now, but...
yeah.
For a while, going into a club was like the worst possible thing that I could have done.
And do you find socially that's like accepted? Do you feel okay to be like, no, I don't drink and I don't want to drink tonight or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have never felt peer pressured, actually.
That's
like
good.
My whole life. Yeah.
You must have really nice friends.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of them would love to see me drunk now. But... yeah.
The sensible friend that everyone's always waiting, when's she gonna do it?
Yeah, it's more like I'm the one that's gonna film them being really drunk and threaten to be like, guys, I'm gonna post this on Instagram. No, I wouldn't do that.
So then how did you then because you do see a therapist, don't you? So
yes.
How did you take that step then?
So when everything started getting more serious with blogging and uploading to YouTube and starting to work with brands and all of that started kind of kicking off, which I think was around 2012. I started doing a lot more things that were really out of my comfort zones. So obviously being in my bedroom and filming videos is so like within my comfort zone. I'm not
it's
having
quite
to
safe. Isn't
yeah,
it?
It's really yeah. safe. I'm not having to go out and meet with camera crews or do things that feel really alien to me. So I found doing that fine, you know, from the comfort of my own home. I was editing the videos myself. I was choosing what I wanted to film. I was choosing how I wanted to do them and upload them and everything. And then so many great opportunities were coming up. So, you know, do you want to come and interview One Direction? Do you want to come and film this thing for this YouTube channel? Or do you want to work with this brand where they're going to shoot you for a day? And obviously those things are so exciting, but I found them all so difficult. And I did want to do them because I just never want to think, oh, I should have done that. So many things I was like, yeah, I'd love to do that. Like, I know how important it is for me to push myself out of my comfort zone. But I just started finding it all so hard. And then kind of simple things like being recognized doing my local food shop, or being stopped for a photo in the street, or having, for a while we had people like waiting outside our house, and just all these little things that I could never have predicted would be happening to me in my life. I was like, okay, this is making my anxiety so much more heightened and so much worse, because I never, like, you know, I liked being in my home. I'm like miss cozy comforts, and now all of a sudden I'm like shooting these things in London and interviewing One Direction and going to premieres, and I'm not used to this. So then I decided to work with a therapist in 2014, and I've been speaking to her ever since.
And did you feel like that instantly made a big difference to you? I suppose being someone who has been like thrust into the spotlight, it's quite nice to talk to someone who's kind of neutral and...
Yeah, yeah. And she really made me understand my own mind, which I didn't really realize beforehand what therapy was. Like, everyone has this vision of therapy being like you're lying on a couch and you're crying into a box of tissues. And that is so not what that was for me. It was somebody teaching me how my mind was working and why it was working in that way, and then finding a way to undo that and change the way my mind was working in order to better suit my life. I've just learned so much. It's been like the best thing I've ever done.
So then what made you kind of then from that moment decide to speak about it? Because I suppose for you, coming from talking about makeup and things that you like doing on a day-to-day basis and kind of vlogging all those things, to then talk about something quite personal, was that quite a big step for you?
Yeah, I think at the time my anxiety was starting to get quite bad. I think I posted my first video about it in 2013. So this was a year before I decided to speak to a therapist. And
oh, okay.
I had started doing all these things and my anxiety was so bad. But there would be times where we would be on stage doing something, for example, and I started to worry that fans would sense my anxiety and think that I was not who I appear online. Whenever we did like meet and greets, for example, I used to find those so hard, because you just worry that everyone has this expectation of you, and you'll know exactly what that feels like, and you don't want to let anyone down. And if you're doing a book signing and you're meeting 800 people, you want person number one to get the same experience as person number 800. So you push yourself through it and you're like, I'm going to give every single person 110% of Zoe. But by doing that, you're also like completely kind of crumbling yourself away as the day goes on. And I used to get so aware of it, and I just used to think like, I can't show that I feel anxious. I don't want people to see that I am like panicking, because I don't want them to think less of me. Like, I used to get really embarrassed.
I think it's like feeling like you have it, having to live up to an expectation, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, although yes, that is the real you, I think there's that fear of when people meet you of it almost being a letdown. You're like,
yeah. And you just so, yeah, exactly. And also, I think just to explain to people that anxiety works so differently for each individual, because I would go on stage and do like an interview, or we would do some sort of like challenge on stage in front of thousands of people, and it would confuse people because they would be like, but I thought you were anxious. And I'm like, yeah, but it takes every bone in your body to keep you there. Mm-hmm. And then you walk off and you just completely crumble, or you crumble before you get up there. So I think I wanted people to see that like what you're seeing isn't the whole picture. So I look like I've got this perfect life, and here's my lovely bedroom, and here's all the makeup that I love and use, and here's all these cool things I'm doing. But I want you to know that to get to those points, it wasn't as straightforward as me just strolling on that stage and having the best time ever. And that I absolutely love meeting everybody, but that is also one of the situations where it takes every part of me to try and stay there that whole day. And also because as an 18-year-old myself, I would have loved to have seen somebody speaking about it like that. I think I would have found so much comfort and reassurance in somebody who I liked to follow or somebody that I looked up to speaking quite openly about that. And so I just made the decision that I would sit down and be really open about it and just say, this is what I struggle with. This is how I feel about this. And when you see this really nice photo or you see this picture at this premiere, that's not the full reality. Like, there's so much more to me than just what you see. And I think it helped a lot of people.
What was the response like to that first video?
I think because of a lot of the content that I put up is quite like surface level stuff. It's like, oh, here's what I bought in Lush. So everyone's like, oh, cute. Yeah, I love that soap too. But when I uploaded this video, it was like all the comments were like paragraphs and paragraphs of people saying, I would never have guessed, and I'm the same, or I've struggled with this. And it's, yeah, it's like a whole, you open up like a whole other world of conversation with people.
Mm-hmm. And did you feel like it kind of helped you a little bit? Because I've found by talking quite openly about my mental health is that it's almost then I've stopped hiding a little bit.
It takes the pressure off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it is that all of a sudden that expectation that you think people have of you that's so high, you can say, hey, look, it's not like, you know, sometimes I struggle with this. And by you being quite vulnerable and open with them, it almost, I don't know, it's almost like a bond then, and it's like people understand you better. Mm. And that pressure of trying to be who you think all these people need you to be is dropped a bit more because they understand more about you.
Do you take on a lot of pressure for all the girls that are, you know, and boys that follow you and kind of listen and take on everything you say? Do you feel a pressure there with that, that you're kind of like an idol to so many people?
I think so, but it's the sort of thing that I'm just aware that I want to continue to talk about it. I never wanted it to just be that one moment in time in 2013 where I just uploaded a video. That for me was like the start and me kind of like opening the door and being like, hey, I struggle with this. And I will always want to openly talk about it to encourage more people to be speaking about it. There was a time when I uploaded that video shortly after that, because I think it sparked a lot of conversation in the community, and lots of people were saying like, I had no idea that I was suffering with anxiety, but after watching your video and hearing you speak about it, I can see now that that's what I'm struggling with. A few people were like, oh, do you think people are just jumping on the bandwagon? Like, do you think anxiety is like this new trend? And I'm like, no, because we're talking about it. More people are talking about it, or they're discovering exactly what's going on with them. So I've always been very like, I'm going to just continue to talk about it, because clearly we've still got a way to go and there's still some sort of stigma and taboo around mental health. But I definitely think over the last 8 years, it's just being talked about more and more and more, which is amazing.
Yeah, it has changed so much. I think I first spoke about my mental health in 2012, and then I kind of put a lid on it and was like, it was still very much like, okay, you've said it now, don't want to be poster girl for mental health issues, yeah. You know. And then as time's gone on, I've been like, no, actually wouldn't say that that's true. And the conversation has definitely evolved. And you became Mind Charity's first digital ambassador, didn't you?
Yeah, awesome. I did.
A fellow Mind ambassador.
Yeah. Mind was actually the website that I discovered when I was trying to work out what was going on with me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I found the Mind website and I was going through it and like looking at all the like symptoms and things that you could be experiencing. And I was like, oh, that is anxiety. So it was the Mind website where I actually discovered that it was anxiety that I was suffering with.
And you've had such a huge career for someone who's, how old are you now?
Only 30. God, I almost said 28 now. Yeah, I'm 30.
Oh my God, you're so old.
I know. I feel like this birthday doesn't count because we haven't been able to celebrate it.
Oh, so I know.
It doesn't count. I'm still 29.
It's so rubbish, isn't it? I think, you know, you are only 30 and you've achieved so much, you know, probably I don't know, more, if not more than most people by, you know, even a lot older than you. Do you find that as a pressure on yourself or an expectation from others for you to kind of keep achieving this same level as, of success?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I did have a little moment of that where I thought, you know, I'm not going to continue in this like upward peak forever. And at some point it's going to mellow out and go down. And I just kind of rejuggled my life a little bit. Like, I think because I've sort of had my head down and just gone with it, taken all these cool opportunities while I can, and I'm still really enjoying creating the content. I'm still loving what I was doing even back in 2012 on YouTube and things. I took a step back and I was like, right, let's reevaluate, which now I quite like to do each year, and just refocus on what things are you enjoying doing, what things mean a lot to you, what things would you like to do, and then trying not to cram in as much as I have done previously. Especially now as I'm getting older, I just feel like my 20s were just this wild ride of craziness, and now I'm like, okay, I'm in my 30s. I feel like eventually I'm gonna like slow down, start a family, and do things slightly differently. But also, it was like a moment of I'm not 22 anymore. Like, the things that I enjoyed doing when I was 22, I still enjoy some of them. But without having that kind of rain check of being like, you're 30 now, you're not 22, you don't want to be going at the same pace you've always gone at, is quite nice because, yeah, at some point things have got to change. You can't just carry on at the same pace.
No, I think that was a big realization for me as the years have gone on. As someone who's worked from such a young age, you feel like you've got to keep this constant,
yeah,
like busyness. Like, I still find it weird now of like not being busy 24 hours of the day, 365 days of the year. Like, it's,
yeah, you almost feel guilty.
Yeah, and that's not how you measure success.
Like, no, so true.
My manager was like, that's not a measure of success. You don't have to be busy every single day to be successful. And I think that takes a long time for anyone, whatever industry you're in. I think that's what's almost been, if you can find a silver lining with everything that's going on at the minute with coronavirus and lockdown and things like that, is we have all been forced to slow down and kind of take a step back. Like,
yeah,
how have you found that? Have you found it's kind of helped your anxiety or made it worse?
It was so interesting because if 5 years ago you'd said to me, there's going to be a pandemic in 2020. You won't be allowed to leave your house. You won't be allowed to make social plans. You certainly can't go to a gig or to a nightclub, and you can't get on a flight. I would have been like, that sounds like my idea of like heaven, like actually being told that I can't leave the house. But amazingly, I was like, oh, like I want nothing more than just to go to a gig and like be surrounded by people, or I want nothing more than to be on a flight. And those were all the things that I really found so hard, but it made me realize how far I'd come with my anxiety, that I was at home wishing that I wasn't.
Okay, yeah.
So that was really interesting. But my anxiety is not really health based. So something like coronavirus didn't affect me in that way, where I was kind of worrying that I was going to get it, or like a health-based anxiety. But it certainly had its moments where, like, the feeling trapped thing.
I was going to say, if you're someone who doesn't like feeling trapped, now being told, although you love your house, now being told you cannot leave your house, surely that made you feel funny. Or maybe because it was in your house, it wasn't so bad.
Yeah, no, I had a couple of days. I feel like most people I know have had those wobble days. I feel like everyone listening to this will have been like, I've had a wobble day.
Yep.
Where you're like, what is the world? And when is this, you know, when is this going to feel like it did before? But I think for me, it was just more of that sort of time of reflection. And I took every day as it came, which I kind of surprised myself about, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's a weird one. For me, I'm get quite anxious in social situations. So at first I was like, this is great. Like, I don't have to say no to anyone. I don't have to say yes to things I don't want to do. Like, everyone has stopped. So I'm not getting FOMO or worrying what everyone else is doing. Like, this is good. And then I remember the first time I rang my therapist, like after lockdown, she was like, you're probably my only client that's been fine. Like everyone,
how
I've had
interesting.
More phone calls from like everyone
my
else.
Therapist said the same thing to me. How funny.
Really? We would have been great. And then for me, it was more like the slow, like coming out of lockdown of that uncertainty of like, well, you're kind of allowed to do this, but you can't really do that. And I feel like they left everything so grey that it was almost like you had to decide what was right or wrong. And then I had this fear of posting something and everyone being like, you're wrong, you shouldn't be doing that. And then
I'm exactly the same. I found it more difficult easing back out of it.
Yeah.
I like a routine, I think. And when we were in lockdown, I nailed the routine. We had that down. And then when it was like, oh, but now you can go out or now you can make plans with your four friends. It was then that like bringing everything back in and like being like, okay, how were we doing this before? Because I've sort of forgotten.
Yeah.
I found that a bit more. And also just because everything is still so... kind of strange out and about, like it isn't normal just to go to the shops now. You don't really casually browse in the same way, and you don't meet friends in the same way, and you still have all these things that you can't do but you sort of can. So it's like you said, it's like, you know, it's just such a gray area that you don't feel 100% comfortable doing anything.
And I read somewhere that you'd been to see Joe in the theatre and even that made you feel anxious.
Oh god, yeah. So for me as well, a lot of it is the feeling of I can't leave this. So obviously going to see your brother in West End, I can't be that sister that like bails. And because I really, really wanted to see it, but the pressure of me staying to see it is what can cause my anxiety. So things like meetings I used to find really hard because I didn't want to be that like unprofessional woman who calls you in for a meeting and then gets up halfway and just walks out. So I would just put pressure on myself to force myself to stay in situations when really if I wanted to I could have been like, oh, I'm just going to nip to the toilet, or I'm just going to go and take this phone call. Like, you're never really in a situation where you can't just get up and leave, but I always used to kind of stick myself in situations. And that was one of them. And we'd rushed there. Like, I'd got the tube, which I used to find really hard. And I was like, no, I've got this. Like, I'm feeling fine. Like, we'd run through Covent Garden and then we'd like run straight in, taken a seat, and then it started. And I think I'd basically just I'd just done all the things wrong. Like, as an anxious person or generally anxious person, you know the things to not do and the things that you need to take a bit more time over. And I just did that so wrong. But I did manage to stay. I didn't leave. I managed to stay and it was great. But yeah, that is a prime example. If it was, you know, just going to watch it and Joe wasn't in it, I don't think I would have felt the same way. But it was
really?
Because it was that pressure of being like, I don't want him to go, how was it? And me turn around and go, oh, I didn't see it. Yeah. Sorry, Joe.
No, that's a really good point. To be fair, I'm a bit like that in, I've been like that in gigs and stuff that I've gone to see. If it's really busy and you're really crammed in, then I kind of panic that I can't get out because there's too, I would never be that person that's right at the front of the barrier, like, like loving their life. That would be my worst nightmare.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't find me there either.
No, yeah, you could put us on stage, which is still give you anxiety, but you've got your space to move and you can get off if you really need to. And you decided to do a video with your therapist. Is that your personal therapist? So what made you do that, just to kind of open the conversation?
Yeah, it was something that we'd wanted to do for a really long time because I've been very open about me doing therapy and I talk about it a lot in my videos and just generally. And I'd always said to her, like, I think it would be so helpful for people just to hear some of the things that you say to me and some of the things that have helped me, but also just things that people could kind of keep in their back pocket. And anyone suffering just with general anxiety, obviously everyone's anxieties are so different, so it's quite hard to listen to one therapist's advice on anxiety in general, but So we recently did Digital Detox Day, which is a campaign to encourage people to look at how much they're using social media and whether they should take a bit of space from it. And basically the negative impact that social media can have on people's mental health.
Which is interesting as someone whose whole life is based online.
And I can see it. I can see it because I've been online for 11 years. I can see the change that it has on people and how it, I can see how it's getting worse for people. And obviously in my DMs, I have people all the time saying like, oh, I'm being bullied online, or I'm finding being online really hard. And that was just something that we thought would be like the best campaign to put together, because I spend time online. This is what I do. I also have anxiety, and I can see how social media can have a negative impact on people. It can be an incredible place at the same time, but like everything, too much of something is probably not going to be good for you. So we did this campaign, which was in September, and we asked everybody to like take the day off. And in the run up to the campaign, we focused on the specific areas that would affect people's mental health related to social media. So we had things like body image, cyberbullying, and one of the videos was anxiety. And we were doing kind of panel discussions with other influencers and creators. And I was like, there's one person who I just think would be perfect to do this video. And that was my therapist. So we sat down and did like an hour long Zoom chat. And people really loved it.
I think it's just those simple little nuggets, isn't it? That, okay, everyone's anxiety might be different, but I think sometimes just hearing it from a professional and how they word things, you just kind of go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. But I think sometimes if it's your friend or a family member, we tend to not listen to them because we're like, well, you're emotionally involved, so you're going to say these things. And it's actually true. Having someone from the outside say it, you kind of take it in more.
Yeah, it's so true.
Get affected by things online, or are you quite good at kind of blocking out other people and taking it for what it is?
I definitely had a moment, I think back in like 2013, 2014, when it got like a lot, I was kind of like reading every comment and like I would take things so personally. And then as the years have gone on, I've detached myself more and more to things like that, because I guess you see it so much now, and it's not right, but it's almost like you have to desensitize yourself. But there will definitely still be occasions where I'll read something or I'll see something and be like, oh, like that's so frustrating, because it really muddies like your whole day. And it's so true, like you can read all these lovely messages and there'll just be one that stands out to you and you're like, that's not right, or you've got me so wrong, or, and I'm the sort of person that I take things really personally and I care way too much about what people think about me, which is just like the worst combination if you're going to be a kind of influencer online. But there are certainly a lot more things in place now, or things that are being put in place. And there are so many more people being very open about it and talking about trolling and like obviously the negative effect that that can have on you. But I don't know. I have no idea like if it will just carry on. I feel like over the years it's got worse, because I think people have gotten used to just being able to say whatever they want. And 9 times out of 10, there's absolutely no repercussions for that either. So
I think it's an
expectation
as well. I think once you start sharing, it's almost like, oh, well, you've put yourself out there so I can say what I want about you now. And it's like, well, would you say that to someone's face, or would you say that to someone else? So 9 times out of 10, they probably wouldn't.
No. And they also never really get the full picture. Like my therapist always used to say to me, like, you have to remember these people don't know you. They're not coming into your house every week and sitting down with you and having a coffee, or curling up on your sofa with having a movie night, or like they don't actually know you. They only know what you're giving them. So, you know, you have to kind of take it with a bit of a pinch of salt in that aspect. And also, it's just one of those things, isn't it? I don't think trolling will ever change unless they get, you know, these big crazy measures in. But
I just don't see how they're going to monitor it. It's just like the internet is so big. It's like, how are they going to stay on top of that?
You did that program, didn't you, where you met with a troll?
Yeah.
I remember watching that and thinking, oh my God, she is so brave.
I was so scared.
I can't remember what happened when you actually confronted them.
You know what? Most of them had nothing to say.
Yeah.
And then the ones that did, it's really hard. I think you get two types. Like I met one and she was just not sorry at all and was just kind of like, well, this is my opinion. You put yourself out there. You deserve it. I can say what I want. And then, like, one of the guys that I met and had a chat with, he was, like, genuinely sorry.
Mm.
Well, I don't know. I think at the time I remember thinking, I'm not sure it's genuine, but he said he was sorry.
Yeah.
But I felt that came more from a place of embarrassment of, I normally say these things. No one ever pulls me up on it. No one knows it's me personally. And I can kind of have that outlet and no one needs to know. And then I think knowing that his face had been put to it and his name, he was then embarrassed. But I don't feel like that was necessarily because he was sorry, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think it's hard. And I think we all have this vision of what a troll is. And the thing that I found scary when doing the documentary was that we all kind of envision these people that don't leave the house, have no friends, don't have a life, and they're just miserable and sat at home. And actually, 9 times out of 10, that's not the case.
Yeah,
and
true.
I think that scared me a bit. I was a bit like, oh God, so it's just normal people that just
say
I don't
what
know.
They want to say. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think genuinely think it is because it's faceless. It's just a way of, I don't know why you need that outlet, but you know, yeah, I think it's going to be hard. I think next generations, though, hopefully are going to be more aware of it.
Yeah, I think so. It's the sort of thing that I know now is being taught in schools quite young too. I think as young as like year 5. And I think that's great because I think the more awareness you get at a younger age of like how best to use social media and how not to use social media, the better, because I think kids are getting younger and younger now using social media. And that's where I'm like, oh, I don't know how it will affect, you know, I'm 30-year-old. So when someone says something to me, I've probably heard it 30 times already. Yeah. And I'm like, but if that's, I don't know, an 11-year-old reading something about herself before going to bed at night, that's going to affect somebody so, so much.
Mm. I think we're almost playing catch up. I think for like our generation, it's all still quite new and everyone's kind of learning. My sons are 5 and nearly 7, and I'm kind of like, I hope by the time they're at an age, if social media is still a thing, that everyone will have learnt by then, this is the right thing to do on there, this is not quite right, and everyone's kind of figured it out. I don't know if that's like a dream world for a parent, and
I hope it'll
be fine.
I really hope so. I saw a quote that was, and it's really stuck with me because I just think it makes so much sense, is that if you're not kind online, you're just not kind. You're not a kind person in real life either. Like, you can't be, you can't choose to say like, oh no, I'm a really lovely person in real life. I just like to say these things online, but that doesn't make me an awful person because I'm nice in real life. Mm. I feel like the accountability for how you behave and how you speak to people is exactly the same as online as it is offline. And I just really liked that. It was like, if you're not kind online, then you're just not kind.
Yeah, such a good point.
Yeah, like so you don't get like an excuse just because you typed it instead of saying it to someone's face. It's the same. Yeah. They're still reading it. They're still taking it in the same way.
And I think sometimes almost written is almost worse because you can just keep looking at it.
Yeah, and it's imprinted. Like you can shut your eyes and you can still see it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much. I could just keep on chatting. I'm like, we've been going for a really long time now. But I just have found it fascinating. Like I said, I was so excited to talk to you. I think just as someone with such a huge platform, I commend you for just being so open and honest about everything. And I think, you know, you're going to help so many people with that. And I hope you keep it up. And
thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Lovely to speak to you.
Thanks. Now remember, this podcast is all about encouraging us to be open and have those hard but important conversations. If you're struggling with your mental health, the best thing you can do is to talk to someone. If you'd rather chat to someone impartial, there are plenty of resources and support provided by the mental health charity Mind. That's mind.org.uk. So that's all from me for now. Until next time, so look after yourself.